So I just absolutely love Mark and Siobhan Potter. Siobhan runs our religious ed program, and Mark runs our senior high youth group. And they are so cute together. On this past Thursday, after the Thanksgiving Mass, Siobhan walked up to me and she asked me, she said, "Reverend Meyer, would you take a photo of me and my family for our Christmas card?" And so they stood in front of the altar there, and I took a few pictures, and Mark says to Siobhan, you know, "Okay, come on, we have to go." And he says, "I need to go home and get the food ready." Well, Siobhan very calmly, undisturbed by his anxiety, just kind of flipped through the pictures that I took. And she said, "Not so fast, Mark. Your eyes were closed. We got to do it again." So Mark lined up, you know, with the family again, and I could tell he was getting a little antsy. And so this time when I took the picture, I handed him the phone to look at the pictures. And he says, "Oh, no, don't show it to me. Show it to Vito Queen over here." And as Siobhan took her time kind of looking through this last round of pictures, Mark says, "Siobhan, really, we really got to go, or there'll be nothing to eat today." And so Siobhan eventually approved the pictures, and off they went. And then I later thought, Mark was planning for what was coming. He was calculating how much time it would take to get from church to home, how much time to prepare the food, to cook it, and eventually to have it ready for the guest who would come. He was focused on his guest. He was awake, he was alert, and ready to serve. And that is what the Advent season is all about, as we wait for and prepare our hearts to encounter the Christ child. So this idea of being awake and alert and ready is the theme of our readings this morning. In Matthew's gospel, it is a continuation in the chapter of Jesus sharing a mix of prophetic stories of the end time struggles that his disciples will face. He's sharing familiar stories that they would know from their tradition. And he's sharing parables and images of things to come, leading to his message to them. It begins at the top of the chapter with the disciples and Jesus coming out of the temple when Jesus makes a shocking prediction. He says to them, "One day this temple will be destroyed and not one stone will be left upon another." A prophecy which in fact did come true. The Romans did destroy the temple in 70 CE. This news, though, shocked the disciples. And so they came to Jesus privately with a question that they asked him. They said, "Tell us, when will this happen, and what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age?" They wanted to know, can our faith exist outside of physical building of the temple worship? They weren't sure it could. In fact, they were convinced that this would mean the end of the age. When the building is gone, what's next? Is our faith dependent on the physical building that we gather in, or can it exist outside of these walls in a world in which we are called to live? Great question, right? And so Jesus answers it in story. He retells the story of Noah, one who didn't have a sanctuary or a temple, just his faith and his relationship with God and God's words to guide him. Noah preached and prepared for the ark for 120 years, according to the story, until the flood came. And all the while, he was calling on those in his community to repent of the violence, the evil, the corruption, and the human oppression of his day. And when they didn't listen, he still invited them to join him in the ark, warning them of the flood that was coming. They ignored Noah's warning, thinking that time was on their side. And I thought, you know, they're not much different from us. Sometimes we as humans ignore warnings too that can have grave consequences for us, don't we? I know that I have. Like, I've ignored a slow leaking tire until I ended up on the side of the road with a flat. I've ignored gas being too low until I run out of it. And as a nation, we unfortunately ignore warning signs that could also have grave consequences for our earth. In the last few years, Pope Francis, Greta Thunberg, and many climate scientists, activists, and other world leaders have been warning governments for a long time of the dangers of climate change. And yet, our current administration continues to ignore those warnings, which will have grave consequences for us all, and are already having them. We have rising sea levels, flooding, drought, extreme weather patterns, violent storms, water and food supply depletions, changes in the ecosystem, and global meltdowns of ice sheets and alpine glaciers. But this summer, when we shared this news with you, you did not ignore these warnings. You heeded the warning and began doing work in your families to reduce your carbon footprint in an effort led by Reverend Mary and Mark Potter. It will take all of us, friends, to save our planet with the time that we have left. Noah, like many of you, wasn't deterred by others not attending to the warning. His message was the same, right up until the day he took his faith, his animals, and his family into the ark that Jesus tells about. He was awake, he was alert, and ready for the flood because he was prepared. And those left behind had a missed opportunity. Well, then Jesus tells another familiar story in the gospel today that we have known as the rapture or the end of the age experience, awaiting the coming of Jesus, our Advent theme. He tells them of people who were not in a temple or sanctuary praying, but he tells them a story of people in a field, two men in a field and two women working alongside each other in a mill, ordinary people, just being faithful to the work that they have in front of them. And Jesus says, one will be taken and the other left. But these people that Jesus is talking about, what they were doing was using their faith until that time came. And many of you take your faith with you every day, like those in this story, and you go out into the world and you make a difference. Some of you take care of the differently abled, the elderly, children, those in hospitals and nursing homes, those in jails and in our larger community. You know that faith isn't confined by a building or a structure. It's a gift from God to be used to serve others. And so we come here every week to be fed in order that we might go out and do that work. So when Jesus finishes telling these two stories, he reminds the disciples that no one knows the day or hour of his return but God. So he says, your job and ours is to simply stay awake, stay alert, and be ready. Be ready to encounter me. So they wondered, if the building is gone, what's next? But you know, I thought, we know a little something about that. When the building is gone, what's next? In 1998, when we were leaving Corpus Christi, we had no idea what the future held in terms of worship space to become and continue to be a Catholic community. In fact, we didn't even know if we would remain Catholic until we decided during an all-parish visioning day, and many of you may remember that. The one thing, though, that we did know and that we were sure of is that we were committed to the poor and outreach. We needed to stay awake, we needed to stay alert, and we needed to stay ready to serve the poor. And we understood that we, Spiritus Christi, are a Luke's gospel church. When Jesus declared in the synagogue these words, they resonated with us. The Spirit of the Lord is on me because God has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. God has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight to the blind, to set the oppressed free. We saw Jesus' mission as our mission, and it was the one thing that we were sure of in the transition. A commitment to that mission is why we started our outreaches. Outreaches to the homeless, those in recovery, hospice home for people who are dying, Jennifer and Nielsen House for men and women coming out of prison, and a mental health center for people who were underinsured or had no insurance to receive mental health care. In response to the social violence and oppression against women and members of the LGBTQ community, we created a church where all are welcome and encouraged to follow their call. In our world, we were committed to bringing good news to the poor in Rochester, to the poor in Haiti, to the poor in Chiapas, and setting the oppressed free. And you know, when you're committed to serving the poor, it actually requires that we stay alert, that we stay awake, and that we stay ready. Because we live in a world that is always targeting the poor. We can easily get dull to it and think that there's some kind of natural quality to it. If we're going to, though, align with the poor and oppressed, Jesus invites us to stay alert, to stay awake, to be ready, to act out of our faith with them. And you know, we've done this many times in our history. We were alert and walked with the poor when families and children were targeted at our borders, when children were separated into cages. We didn't think, oh, when is the end coming? Like the disciples, we acted out of our faith. We organized with other local groups and groups across the country, and we put together a Families Belong Together rally. And we called for children to be returned to their parents and compassionate immigration reform to be developed. We put our faith in action. When we were at Corpus, we decided to be sanctuary for El Salvadorian refugees. Again, putting our faith in action for the poor. We now have another opportunity in this community to put our faith into action with the poor and the oppressed. You may have heard this week that the poor and those in communities of color are on the other end of a newly introduced harassment bill for first responders. This bill wants us to choose first responders over poor people instead of seeing them all as part of one community that needs equal protection. According to a city news article this week, the county legislature introduced a new harassment bill for first responders, born out of what they said a feeling of disrespect, of people becoming more disrespectful of law enforcement, and that first responders needed protection. Which I agree, everybody needs protection. But oddly enough, we already have laws on the books that protect first responders from harassment. And it's used all the time in communities of color. One that I'm quite familiar with is interfering with governmental administration, as well as many other laws that provide adequate legal protection. But this bill is different. It's different than that. This bill simply criminalizes annoyance and alarming behavior without ever having to define what those behaviors are that are alarming or annoying. It is built to be subjective, vague, and fosters an element of surprise for the poor. And if you are found guilty of such a charge, it is no longer a violation as it used to be. It is now being introduced as a misdemeanor, which will foster rampant criminal records in poor communities where over-policing occurs. The data tells us that there are laws like these that are used mostly disproportionately to impact the poor and people of color communities. The result is that annoyance will be defined as whatever the police say that it is, even if it's constitutionally protected speech, like questioning an officer, objecting to poor treatment, sticking out your tongue, or swearing, like I've been known to do. In communities where police-community relations have been fractured because of abuses of power or profiling, these behaviors are really quite common responses to that kind of history. And that is why I have participated with many parishioners in this community and activists for the last few years, working with police chiefs from all of our counties on police community relations, bringing community members together and law enforcement to heal and build relationships. But this bill sets that work back by putting the poor in harm's way to personal preference, someone having a bad day, racism, or bias. It becomes a tool to over-police, to overcrowd courts and jails with the poor and people of color while contributing to mass incarceration and arrest in our community. If this bill was signed into law, I began to think when I was stopped by the police several years ago by stepping out of the car with my hands up and saying, "Would you please call your supervisor and ask him if I can just take these needles to my husband who is ill," when he noticed that my bulb had gone out. If this bill had been signed into law, not only would he have rushed toward me, as he did, spent me around, handcuffed me, and told me that I was putting his life in jeopardy, but I would also be standing before you with a misdemeanor on my record and possibly jail time for simply being perceived as annoying. And so we have an opportunity to speak out about this law and to request that it not be signed into law on Monday. So Jesus says, be awake, be alert, and be ready. You do not know the day or the hour when the Son of Humanity will come. This Advent is a time to be awake, to be alert, and to be ready to Jesus' mission in the world. Once a month, I just like to read our own mission to keep it fresh in my mind. It's a beautiful mission if you haven't read Spiritus Christi's mission in a while. And it simply says we are a Christ-centered Catholic Church, reaching beyond the institutional church to be inclusive of all. Jesus Christ is our pastor, and therefore we open our church as a spiritual refuge. We hold the Eucharist as center of our sacramental life, and we embrace the challenges of the scriptures. We are ordinary people, joyfully following and celebrating the opportunity to follow Jesus. It's a radical message of unconditional love. So being faithful to this mission requires that we work between two points of time, now and the end of the age, whenever that comes. And this is important to Jesus because, like the disciples, we are sent out to build on his legacy of love, of justice, of service to the world. And that is what Advent is all about. We never know when we're going to encounter Jesus in the work that we're called to do. And so these disciples couldn't get distracted by simply wanting to escape into the next world for fear of the future. Advent is a time to be awake, to be alert, and to be ready. Jesus ends in this gospel. He says, "If the master of the house had known the hour of night when the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and not let his house be broken into. And so too," he said, "you must also be prepared, for at an hour when you do not expect, the Son of Humanity will come." And you know, Jesus is right, because he knew that the world is our house, and we cannot allow the thieves of climate change to break in and steal our future. We must prepare to fight for it, to do the work of reducing our carbon footprint, to be prepared to save our planet. We cannot allow the thieves of violence and oppression and discrimination to break into human relationships, to steal our dignity and our future as a beloved community and family together. We are called to stand with the poor and the oppressed. No one understood this message of Jesus like Mother Teresa. She told a story once of her work with the poor in Calcutta. She knew that the systems robbed poor people of dignity, of respect, of opportunity, and service. And so she told a story of being in a heap of rubbish. And she said, "When I was there, I found a woman who was half dead. Her body had been bitten by rats and ants." And Mother Teresa said, "I took her to the hospital, but they told me that they didn't want her because they couldn't do anything for her." She said, "I protested, and I said, 'I won't leave until you hospitalize her.'" And she said, "After a long meeting, finally, they granted my request, and that woman was saved." Now, Jesus knew that the disciples and that we have saving work to do, waiting for us in the world, to allow the light of Christ to work through us. I was at Sister Margie's this past week, She gave her annual Thanksgiving dinner at Grace of God Recovery House. And after dinner, she had us all form a circle, and she asked us each to say one thing that we're grateful for. And when it came to my turn, I said, "I'm grateful for breath. I'm grateful for breath." And that's because when I was in my 20s, my mother had a lung disease. And often at night, I'd be sleeping in the adjacent room, listening to her breathe. And there would be nights when there would be these long periods of apnea and an absence of breath. And I would pray, "Lord, let her breathe. Let her breathe. Because if she breathes, then she has life. If she has breath, then she has life." And every day since, I've been grateful for breath. But you know, we all have this gift of breath. The question that Jesus asks this Advent is, what are we going to do with it? Jesus was not telling these stories to his disciples to scare them or create images of good and bad people who are left behind and those who are taken. He was sending them out, as he sends us this Advent, into a broken world in need of reminders like what we have in Isaiah's first reading. Isaiah paints a beautiful picture of the world that we are called to create. He says, we are called to find that higher place where we are instructed in the ways of God, to walk in God's pathway, a pathway void of violence and war and oppression, to carry the message of a beautiful world where we will beat our swords into plowshares and our spears into pruning hooks. And we will have one nation that shall not raise the sword against another. And I thought, we're going to need every ounce of breath in our bodies to focus on that. And so the disciples, Jesus wanted them to know they do not have to worry about escaping to the end of the age. The job today is to stay awake, to stay alert, and to be ready to walk in God's light.